Sue Grafton's latest entry into her alphabetical mystery series featuring Private Eye Kinsey Millhone is U is for Undertow. And it's published by Marion Wood Putnam. Patrick Anderson of the Washington Post has called the books that began with A is for Alibi one of the best series any American has ever written. Ms. Grafton was named a grandmaster by the Mystery Writers of America this past summer, all of which makes me even more pleased than I normally would be to welcome her back to our show. Hi.
Hello, hello.
This is the 21st book in the series. When you began writing them in the early 1980s, were you sure that you would make it all the way through?
No. In fact, when I wrote A is for Alibi, I wasn't even sure that would be published. I wrote it on speculation, in effect, and sold it on the basis of the first 63, 65 pages. And then was paid money, and I thought, I don't know how to write mysteries. Now I had to finish the darn thing. But I look back on it, and I think, what a cheeky thing to do.
On the other hand, do you think that it helped that you felt you didn't know how to write mysteries?
Yes, I still don't know. See, what I thought would happen, I thought I would write five or six. I'd get the hang of it. I'd whiz through. And I didn't anticipate how much harder each book is than the one I wrote before.
Because you have to keep these people alive and you make some kind of logical progressions.
Yes.
But what you've done is interesting. When the series began, Kinsey was 32 years old, and it was set in the time that it was published. But she's only aged about 6 years since then.
So
in this book, the present is 1988, although you also feature some flashbacks to the 1960s. At what point did you decide to break away from real time in your chronology?
I did that fairly early in the process because projecting 26 books, even if I managed a book a year, which I quickly got to a point where I couldn't do that, I thought, that's a long time. If I age her in a normal progression, she'll start looking stupid. You don't want to see somebody 60 running around with a 44 chasing bad guys. So I thought it would be a smart move to keep her aging a little more slowly. What I didn't realize was that I would then get trapped in the 80s.
Well, it frees you in a way from having to deal with technological advances.
Exactly.
And also the aging process. But also allows you to look back at social changes over the years. In T is for Trespass, you deal with abuse of the elderly by caretakers. In this book, recovered memory syndrome, alcoholism, and child abuse figure into the story. Do you feel that the books have grown more serious as you've worked your way through the alphabet?
I think homicide is always a serious issue. I'm fascinated by crime, and I'm hoping one day to understand the criminal mentality. But in the meantime, I'm working to keep from repeating myself. I don't want to unconsciously lapse into the sort of prototype. I don't see the mystery novel as a formula genre. And so I'm trying to keep myself fresh and alert, and that requires a little bit of ingenuity on my part.
Well, you're caught in an odd situation. Before you began the series, you wrote several non-mystery novels.
Right.
And there you wouldn't have had the problem. But once you decided that it was always going to be about one person and the people she knows and the town that she lives in, then you just were really, the walls must have felt like they were closing in on you.
Well, I liken mystery writing to playing a hand of bridge. A bridge hand is you get 13 cards. That's what you have to work with. And there are rules and regulations, and you have to play within those parameters, which I think is also true of the mystery novel. A mystery novel is carefully structured, and you can break rules, but by and large, you're well advised to play fair. So that makes the job harder, and it's also liberating.
Well, you have changed things, the rules, over the years. At the beginning, it was all first-person narrative.
Yeah.
Now you've brought in other voices, which allows you to tell us the story, some parts of the story, that Kinsey would not be aware of.
Exactly. And what I'm working to do is, I always say, I don't tell the book tells me. So when I sit down to start a new novel, not only do I have to figure out what the story is, I have to decide what the best way of telling it might be. And with U.S. for Undertow, I went at it about three different ways, and I couldn't make it work. I keep saying I could see the story, and I couldn't figure out how to tell it. Finally, it took me a year to solve that problem, which, once I've done that, seems so obvious. You know, I always feel like such a dunce. But when I start the next book, it's not necessarily true that I will do multiple point of view. It'll just be a question of what story and what is the best way to tell it.
Well, I'm sure that your readers don't care whether you do multiple. Then no one is saying, wait a minute, this has to all be in first person.
Yeah,
she's cheating here.
Yeah. Well, I first did it in Essays for Silence because that was the story of a woman who'd been missing for 34 years. And I thought, if Kinsey Millhone takes on this case, it's just going to be talking heads, one interview after another, and we'll never know who's telling the truth. So in that book, I thought, let's let the reader see what really happened. Of course, I hold back a surprise or two, but it was freeing to be able to look at a story from more than one point of view.
There are no computers in these books, no cell phones. Kinsey does her research at the library or by phone or by actually visiting people and talking to them face-to-face. Does that make it more challenging for you to write? Because she has to rely totally on her wits and can't Google up something.
Well, that's true. But I think what's also true is that even with technological advances, with DNA and forensics, it still takes law enforcement officers, some detective, sitting down thinking about what they know and what they need to know. So it always comes back to human intervention and problem solving.
I'm not sure if I asked you this in your previous visits, but did you give her the name Kinsey because she relies so much on research?
No, I actually saw that name in a Hollywood Reporter when I was working in Hollywood, in a column announcing births. So some Hollywood couple named their little girl Kinsey, and I thought, that is a great name. I made up Millhone because it sounded right to me, but people have asked if it was symbolic, Millhone, you know, grinding. Mm. Like, no, I'm not that clever.
You said you used to work in Hollywood. You worked as a screenwriter.
Yes.
And you haven't sold the rights to this?
No. Because I have seen what they can do to a piece of fiction.
And you wouldn't want to do it yourself?
Well, they always tell you they're going to give you all kinds of creative control. They so admire your work. They're so excited. The minute the money changes hands, you're just like being picked up in a bar. If you believe what some guy says to you, you're nuts. So.
And in the end, you discover that Kinsey Millhone is being played by George Clooney.
Exactly.
Because he's the hottest star at the moment.
Exactly.
Well, I got totally lost. Oh, yeah. You lived in Hollywood or you worked in Hollywood.
Yes.
But now you live in Santa Barbara, although the series is set in a town called Santa Teresa.
Yes.
Nobody is confused by that, are they?
Well, people know that it's Santa Barbara, but I did that because I hate to be wrong. And if it were Santa Barbara, they'd be writing me notes telling me this one-way street was running north and south instead of east and west. So with Santa Teresa, since I am the goddess of Santa Teresa, I control all the weather. I move real estate at will. And when I get those notes, I think I'm not wrong. You know, it's like my father used to say, I know it's true because I made it up myself.
Well, I understand that you've made donations to the Santa Barbara Police Force.
Yes.
Does that make it easier for you to ask them for help with the technical details of police procedures?
I think law enforcement, attorneys, coroners are very generous people. They care about their work, and I have never been treated badly or rudely. Even in the beginning of my career, people were invariably polite, except for one asphalt paving contractor in Columbus, Ohio. I don't know why he was so rude to me. I thought I was being really nice.
I heard that there were mob ties.
Kinsey
is a private eye, not a cop. She doesn't have access to the resources of a police department. But so are you careful to give her cases that a private eye would be involved in and not overstep the bounds of her profession?
Yeah, I try because I have so much respect for law enforcement. And I understand that a small town private eye would never be invited into an active homicide investigation. So many times I pick up a cold case or something comes to light that has roots in history.
And that's what happens here. This book involves a cold case, the disappearance of a 4-year-old girl more than 20 years before.
Right.
Will you give us a little synopsis? Yeah.
Well, what interested me was two things. I was interested in the idea that the case begins because a kid comes into her office, 27 years old, and he's just read one of those articles that which they list famous kidnappings, and he sees the name Mary Claire Fitzhugh, and he's thinking, all of a sudden, he has this flash of memory. He believes that when he was 6, he saw these two guys burying her body. And the, what he's asking Kinsey to do is to figure out where he was and whether what he saw was what he believes is true.
Because recovered memory has been discredited in recent years.
Yeah. So one thing that interested me was the issue of credibility. What happens when people don't believe you? You know, we assume that when we converse with people telling us stories that the stories are true, but what if somebody has lied so often? So in some ways, this is the boy who cried wolf.
And it's the sort of case that the police probably would not pay much attention to.
Right. Well, they probably paid attention at the time, but anything that old, you know, there's so much current crime that they can't keep everything on the front burner.
Sue Grafton is my guest. Her latest book, her 21st in the alphabetical series, is U is for Undertow, and it is published by Putnam. In a previous book, Q is for Quarry, the story was based on a real unsolved murder. Didn't your efforts help get the case reopened?
Well, in effect, it was reopened. However, nobody has ever stepped forward identifying the homicide victim. It was our hope that somebody would see that photograph because what we did was sent the skull to Betty Pat Gatliff, excuse me, in Oklahoma. And she recreated this girl's face and we photographed it and put it at the back of the book. There have been about 250 calls, but nothing has ever panned out. So everybody's still interested in seeing the case resolved. For all we know, the killer is dead. Her family, whoever they may be, are also deceased.
In mystery novels, we always find out what happened and who the killer was. But in real life, we don't always.
No. And in real life, you may know who committed the crime and they may walk, you know, getting off on a technicality.
Or the wrong person winds up going to jail, as we
are
discovering
nowadays,
happens all too often.
That's quite true.
In this book, you have sections set in the 1960s told from the point of view of Deborah Unruh, an upper-middle-class housewife bewildered by the changes going on around her. Is she called Unruh because you like to give your characters the initial of the book there?
Yes. It's fun for me. I have to be careful that I don't always name the victim or the perpetrator the initial because then readers will pick up on that. It's like, oh, she must be guilty. Her name is Usury or whatever. So I have to be clever. But I'd like at least some character to have a letter-related name.
Her son has become a hippie. He's living in a bus, and he and his girlfriend are having a child out of wedlock. That's why that theme in the middle of a book about something so totally different?
Well, I got interested in, for one thing, I was live and well and a housewife myself in the 60s, and that was a very interesting period of time. Everything was in free fall. Nothing was as it had been. The traditions were being violated, and I wondered about a story coming out of that period and that kind of chaos. So it was a good starting place, and the character Shelley, who later changes her name to Destiny, she's really the catalyst. She's a very opinionated, angry person, but she was fun to bring to life. But she is, it is this woman who sets everything in motion by her behavior.
So where does something like this begin? With that story?
Well, part of it...
The covered memory?
Yes. It's a little bit of everything. the issue of credibility. I also got interested in the notion of what if two kids come up with a dumb plan that goes sour and they vow never to speak of it again, and then 21 years later something happens that triggers a whole investigation. Sometimes I start with the present story, you know, who did what to whom. Sometimes I go back in time and look at the origin of those crimes.
Well, don't you ever worry that if you stick in too many different things, you're not going to have stuff available for the next book?
Oh, I do worry about that all the time. But you have to trust that the well will fill up again. So I take these books as an article of faith.
Well, Kinsey hasn't changed much over the years. She's still single, still has a mild crush on her octogenarian landlord, Henry. She still eats bad food at Rosie's Tavern. Do you think that as tastes change, she's going to change in the last five books of the series?
Again, I don't tell her, she tells me. I do have readers who would prefer that she have a new dress, a better haircut, a better diet, and I think, no, let's leave her the way she is.
Well, I said the last five books of the series. Some of your fans are already worried that the end of the series is approaching. Will Z be the last Kinsey Millhone book? Because a friend has suggested that you just pick up again and go AA is for aardvark, BB is for base on balls, CC is for CC Rider.
I think I'm going to be way too smart to link titles. If we have other tales to tell, if Miss Kinsey Millhone decides that she'll share her adventures with me, we'll do whatever it'll be an encore. However, no linking titles. I absolutely refuse.
Because that had to have at times been, well, both a boon.
Yes.
You thought, oh, I'll do D is for something.
Yeah, right.
And that it actually gives you some plot ideas, but it also could be a real trap.
Yeah. Well, so far it's kept me on my toes, so let's hope the magic lasts another five books.
You're on tour now, and you're asking your fans to bring books to signings to donate to the Wish You Well Foundation. Can you tell us about that?
That's David Baldacci's baby, as it were. It's part of his contribution to literacy programs, and they collect gently used and new books and then distribute them to people who are, I guess, learning to read and beginning to appreciate good books. So I thought it was a nice way. His idea was that if I'm going to be on the road, I or another writer, it would be a good opportunity to collect books that would otherwise, I don't know, end up on eBay.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can only hope that they don't start bringing in some of the earlier books in your series.
See, but they might be worth a lot of money, in which case I might dip down into the box myself.
Especially if you sign them.
Yes, exactly.
And so what is
V?
V.
I can hold up two fingers like a peace sign for V. I am playing around with some ideas. However, I've got to get through the tour. Then through Christmas, you know, life does intrude. But I've been working on chapter one, which is very complex. I hope to get back to that in January.
Sue Grafton will be reading and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store on 86th Street between Lexington and 3rd Avenues. And then tomorrow she'll be at the Hudson Union Society at noon. That's on 44th Street. For more information and for tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. The most recent book is You for Undertow, published in the Marion Wood imprint of Putnam. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you. It's been fun.